from here to there. We cannot go unless we change and start to grow. Welcome to Lead, Sell, Grow, a show that helps you amplify your leadership, grow your sales, and take your life to the next level, all while being human. Here are your hosts, Eric Konovalov and Harry Speight.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another awesome episode of Lead, Sell, Grow, the Human Experience Podcast. My name is Eric Konovalov. I'm joined by my main man, Harry Speight. And today we have such a treat for you guys. A couple of weeks ago, Harry and I attended an event. It was called Life Surge in Tampa, Florida. And the first speaker that came out just blew me away. As he's on stage, I'm like connecting with him on LinkedIn, typing the messages like a little schoolgirl, you know, like a new fan. So our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, he had a dream of living in America. And in 1986, that dream came true. Chris Dunham landed in America with $9 in his pocket. Can you imagine having $9 in a new country? My goodness. So he had $9, but a really big dream. This immigrant from India became one of two, yes, one of two people in the world who was directly coached by the legendary Zig Ziglar. Chris then became Zig's protege, traveled the world with him, and was by Zig's side quite a bit. So today, Chris is a globally recognized speaker. He's an author of multiple books. He is a managing partner of Skylife Success, but most importantly, he is Anila's husband and Nick's dad. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it. Appreciate you having me on. So,
it's how a many real messages? Honor. How many messages did you get from that? Well, from being on stage, I'm like, I always wonder, like, am I the only guy that's like, hey, you're rocking this show right now?
No, it's fascinating. And I also am, I don't know how many messages I got, but I'm probably the only speaker there who replied to all of them by the end of that day. It's just a habit I've had. So I try to accomplish that before I board the plane, because one of the days it'll be the last talk and the last plane ride. So I want to get that all accomplished.
So. Oh, man. What a humbled attitude. So before we get into Chris, so after that Life Surge event, I was just randomly talking to a good friend of mine. Her name is Kathleen Gag, and she's local here in Florida. And we were talking because she is just a huge supporter of the U.S. military and veterans and things like that and everything that's happening with Afghanistan. Like, I'm a veteran. I was in Afghanistan in 2001. It really rubbed me the wrong way, so we were having a conversation. Turns out she was at Life Surge. Then I'm like, oh my God, well, one of the speakers from Life Surge is coming on. She said, who? I said, Chris. She said, Chris, he's a good friend of mine. So today, so we had this awesome conversation. So today, Chris, I texted Kathleen before the show. I said, is there some specific, no. I said, hey, Kathleen, I'm interviewing Chris. Anything you'd want me to say to him? Here's what she texted back. Tell him I give him a great virtual hug. He's the most inspirational soul I have met. He has made such an impact on my life and countless military families. Tell him thank you and I love him. I said, okay, wow. I'm definitely saying that during the show. How powerful is that? I got chills. Me I said, too. I'm definitely saying that over the show. But I said, was there something specific that he's done that stands out? She said, he volunteered his own time to come to both our Camp Better America retreats to help military families reconnect and continued to offer help after it was over. So positive and such an inspirational human. He was there for me when I was going through a hard time with losing my job recently. Chris, you're globally known. Like, and here's a woman who just here locally, she's not a celebrity. She's an awesome lady. She's a great friend. But and you're impacting her life like this. Did you know that you had that kind of impact on Kathleen?
No, I didn't. But yeah, I was quite emotional when you were reading that, because thank you for your service. Because thank of people you. Like people like you, guys like me, can have a dream of coming from a far off shore. It's your sacrifice that allows the lights. I don't know if you saw that LinkedIn post. When you mentioned Afghanistan, I was on my morning walk on Sunday and I saw 13 flags that were posted on Flower Mound. And then the morning sun was coming up And so I took a picture of that. But believe it or not, Eric, you'll find this fascinating. I wear a cap now more than any, because I'm just gray and probably balding. But when I walk by an American flag, I still take it off, even on my walk when no one's looking. I'm just grateful. And so when Kathleen and Tim asked me to be part of Camp Better America, it was a great joy. We restored some lives there. We were grateful to be a part of it. And yeah, so when you mentioned the word humble, I don't ever look at that as a word. Fred Smith used to say, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking less often of yourself. And so there are some days I'll walk tall and act proud because I'm a salesman and I have to make a sale. If I just walk around meek, I'm going to be a professional visitor. So sometimes I have to ask for the business. But most of the time, I've practiced Mr. Ziegler's philosophy. So even that day when I took my flag off, I sang the national anthem to myself. It's the right thing to do. And, you know, I got an email from somebody whose two sons are twin boys are serving in the United States Navy. And he says, I follow you as a businessman, but you posting the picture of the flag and telling me that you took your hat off and you sang the national anthem on your morning walk. You know, I said, I posted the picture just as a tribute. I didn't want to put myself in the picture because that would be self-aggrandizing. But, you know, so yeah, this is we're in some very precarious times. I don't know how we got off on that tangent, but.
Well, it's in our hearts. It's on our minds. You know, I got chills as you're talking right now, Krish. I don't know if you know this, but how old were you in 1986?
I was 24.
You were 24, and you came here with your bride already at 24 years old. You're a young man. Mm-hmm. My parents left in 1989 from Russia, so I was born in Azerbaijan. I was 9. Okay. And we went through this whole immigration process of Austria for 6 months, then Italy for 6 months. And I think that's where they decide we were like Jewish refugees. So either we ended up in Israel or the United States. We ended up in the United States. All of my cousins, by the way, are in Israel.
Okay.
And there's something, like when you're talking, I feel it. There's something about America that I love so much that I have to stand for the national anthem. I'll take my hat off when I'm walking by. I understand what you're talking about. Is that respect, but I don't think a lot of people have it. How do you instill that?
Well, I mean, you know, when you look at sales or when you look at the components that you're experts in, the basic pride that you have to have is threefold. You have to have pride for that which you believe created you. So that's looking up. Mm. You have to have pride for that which you stand on. That's the country. That's gratitude. And you have to have pride for that which you lean on. That is the family and the close inner circle that propels you. And I think if you have that kind of pride, which is a healthy self-pride, both above, below, and behind, you're unstoppable. The rest of it just washes off you. Because I tell people at the end of the day, I'm not looking for more friends. I have two. And, you know, so, and you know, life's not a popularity contest. If it was, I'd have lost a long time ago. I was always the fat kid, never in any athletic. Why would anybody come to me for advice, you know?
Oh, my God.
I come to America and Troy Aikman signs an $8 million contract with the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm thinking to myself, $8 million to throw a football. For $2 million, I'd be the ball. So, you know, so it's just, you know, you keep your gratitude, and that's the beauty of this nation. It's founding the free enterprise. This nation was built on simplicity, and that simplicity was always anchored in hope. You know, we have a generation now that have no hope because they have no gratitude. Hope without gratitude is hopelessness. Wow. And change without strategy is cluelessness. And I don't want to go into hope and change.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. Yeah, I remember we've been there. Mm-hmm. So I read that you won a contest, right? Mm-hmm. So you get to America, 24-year-old man, and you win a sales contest. And that winning ends you up in a Zig Ziglar seminar. Is that correct?
Yeah. In fact, like I said, I didn't know what a Zig Ziglar was. But my boss saw potential in me, and he... And that's what I was just recording before I got on here. You know, I was talking about something called the prime flow, which is a belief in a future that you cannot see and believing that you can engineer it even though you still can't see it. And my boss looked at me and he says that there's so much untapped potential in you, but you hit your first sale by 9 o'clock. You're required to get X number of sales a month. You get them by the 15th of the month, but you don't do any more than that. And that's when I realized that I don't know. I thought I was achieving the American dream if I did the bare minimum. The country was already good to me. I had an apartment, I had a car, and we could buy pizza, right? So, you know, for a young kid growing up with John Wayne and his hero, I'd already achieved everything. And my boss is saying, no, what you've achieved is the minimum. And he said, I need to send you to the Zig Ziglar seminar. So my sales contest winnings was applied to the seminar, which I thought was rude. I mean, I could have used the money. And I go into the seminar and here's this guy who's never been to college, which means he kind of debunks my whole Indian identity of success has to be a 4-year degree. And in 3 hours, he does more damage to my psyche than my college professors did, but he did it in a good way. I mean, simple stuff like he says, you treat your wife like a thoroughbred, you won't end up with a nag. Now, there's so much brilliance in that it did, you know, it wouldn't pass muster today. But I'm writing notes as furiously as I can. And 3 hours later, I come out of the seminar and I take a left instead of a right and go into the wrong part of town, no cell phones. And I called my bride and I said, I went to hear this guy speak and I'm completely lost. Many years later, Mr. Ziglar said, son, that was the day you were found because 1,500 people came that way and everybody took a right. You took a left. You ended up becoming my VP of global operations and writing a book with me.
Wow.
So,
I mean, first of all, what were you selling when you won the contest?
Telecommunication, long distance telephone service, you know, knocking on doors, asking them for their phone bill so that we could go and do an evaluation and come back and give them a proposal. If they liked the savings, they signed the agreement. Yeah. And that's what it was. I was selling, you know, $50, $100 long distance accounts and making some money on the residuals. But the dream was just like, hey, you know what? We're a young couple now. 3 years after we came here, we got to celebrate our honeymoon because we couldn't afford it when we were there in India. So, but going to work for Mr. Ziglar changed something. Since my foundation of integrity and respect already came with my Eastern roots, he said, building on this is very easy. You guys got time for a quick story?
I think we do.
I think so. We'll, yeah.
So yeah. I started when I was traveling with him, and this is how I thought, you know, now when I look at it, it sounds like profound advice and I get to actually record it and people will subscribe to it. But back then I remember in a hotel in Iowa, I remember Mr. Ziglar's words. He said, son, you need to join the smile, compliment and handshake club and make sure your trousers are always pressed. Your shirt is always crisp and your shoes are always shine. And if you do that, you'll have a head start over other people who sell. Now, there was no strategy there. There was no number of calls there. There was no product knowledge there. He was just preparing the person before he was processing the professional. So I'm walking in this hotel in Iowa, and I see a shoe shine guy, and I tell him, hey, can you wait 15 minutes? I'm going to bring you a couple of pairs of shoes, mine and my boss's. So I went upstairs and knocked on Mr. Ziglar's door, and I said, Mr. Z, can you give me your shoes? I need to get them shine. He said, why? I said, I noticed they were scuffed. He said, and? I said, if they're scuffed, you're not going to be your best. If you're not going to be your best, you're not going to sell as much from the stage. If you don't sell as much from the stage, I won't sell as much behind at the product table, and I'll make less commission. He says, you equated your earnings to my scuffed shoe money? I said, yeah. He says, go get them shine, boy. I've got plans for you. When I came back to the office, he was introducing me. The next time we were walking through the airport, we meet some celebrity, and I'm walking 2 feet behind him like I'm accustomed to. He says, boy, come up. He always called me boy. He called his son boy, too, so don't read more into it. But he said, boy, come up here. I said, yes, sir. He said, say hello to so-and-so. I said, I know them. They're quite famous. He says, no, say hello to them. So I said, hello. I shook hands. And then he tells that celebrity, I want you to say hello to the future, my legacy. There's no job I can give this boy that is so small, he'll say it's beneath him. There's no job I will ever give him that he'll say is so big, it's beyond him. He will take on everything and he'll make a difference. And that's when he started banking on me. And that's how it, because it started with, you know, stuff like getting shoe shined. And people, you know, when I do corporate training now and they ask, how do I get to the top? How do I get on? They say, how do I get on the bench plan? How do I become part of the talent management process? Does it shine some shoes?
Yeah. It's a great analogy and story. Those things are sadly missing. You know, it's just like it requires such little effort to shine the shoes, to press the shirt. I mean, take them to the dry cleaners. It's $2 or whatever, $3 a shirt. It's not going to kill you. And it makes an impression. So yeah, can relate to that.
And those are some of the old great, when you look at that's what we are missing now. I wrote an article the other day on expectation, but this is discipline. In my book, American Dream from an Indian Heart, I wrote this statement that caused a little waves, but I said, we're not poor. We're too cheap to afford the once available commodity of dignity. I said, we have ransacked the cellars of human pride and looted the morals that form the fabric of a responsible people.
Wow.
And profound. You know,
one thing I hear from you, and we had, by the way, Michelle Prince on our show a couple months ago. She's awesome as well. Also came out of the Zig Ziglar company.
And Scott Schilling, too, because Scott said he knew you as well.
Oh, Scott came out of there as well. Okay, I forgot about that. But when you and Michelle specifically talk about Zig, it exudes love. I mean, both of you. It's like there's no other feeling that I can see you have for that man than love. And I watch Zig on the treadmill. I watched, you know, his speeches and his, like, my morning routines, my morning exercises. I'll watch Zig quite often. And I always wondered, I absolutely fall in love with this guy, but how is he behind the scenes? And I think you two have answered that question. But
I've been asked that question because I've shared the stage with him more than any other person living. I traveled with him for 17 years, day in, day out. Wow. I had the privilege, unlike some of the others, to be on a private jet with him for 3 years. So I've had all the success, highs and lows. In fact, I'll put it this way. I got Mr. Ziglar's shoe shined when nobody knew who I was. I took him to the bathroom when he was forgetting who he was. I mean, this was my spiritual father. He's a man I love the most. But to answer your question, I put it this way to people who ask me that question. I said, if the dictionary ever went pictorial, the word consistency would have to have the picture of Mr. Zig Ziglar, or don't buy it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why? What was he consistent in?
He was just 24/7. I mean, like you said, that, you know, when you're with him, it sounds cool. In the early days when I went with him, he'd start the day by, as soon as he saw me at the elevator, hurry, 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 you doing good or you better than good? It's like Groundhog Day. You know, every day it's like, you know, wait a minute. Am I going to come out of the elevator? I got to go to sell me insurance in the next go around, right? It sounded like Bill Murray. It was like, what is going on here? But the reality of this thing was consistency. And I really do think when the memory started failing him, I've seen many people in that stage who were frustrated and angry when they go through that short-term memory loss and that dreaded curse of Alzheimer's. Mm. He always had a smile on his face. And people asked me that. I said, maybe one of the profound mistakes that science made was when they discovered that Mr. Ziglar was in this stage of his life, they should have attributed or attached a couple of neuroscientists to him to find out, because he was always positive, even during those days when he doubted, when he had no short-term memory. And I think it was because of 50 years of input. Mr. Zig Ziglar became a caricature of himself. He did not know how to be anything else at some point.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
So what did he do? If we're talking about leadership,
You've
seen many leaders. Not many leaders have that effect on people. What did he do that made you fall in love?
Two things. One was, he never asked you to do something he himself had never done. So just like anything else, you understood struggle because he came through struggle. You understood effort because he came through effort. You understood hustle because he came through hustle. So one was, he was a replica of that which he was offering you. But the second thing was, you know, there's a principle that I share, which I share with my own dad. When I came out of India, I remember my dad holding my hands through that little fence in that little airport in rural South India. And he says, you're our child, you're leaving home. And my dad gave me these words, which actually resulted in something that Mr. Ziglar did. That's why I was able to connect the two. But my dad said this. He said, for every step you take forward, I'll take one right behind you. God forbid you ever fall, I'll be right there to catch you. Don't be afraid to succeed. Mm. And Mr. Ziglar, when he gave you a plan, he always walked behind you with that plan, that if you fell, you only fell on him.
Can you give me an example of that? Like, what was one of those plans in the beginning where he kind of walked behind you made you feel safe?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. One day I was walking the cart with our product at the Dallas airport. We had done an event at the Tampa for the convention center, and then we were flying to some other city. So we're connecting through Dallas, and I had to take my luggage out and recheck it, because if you remember Mr. Ziegler's old-fashioned water pump, prop he used, I carried that all over the world in a special aluminum case with its own foam padding, and you know, we called it a national treasure. So I was lugging all the product and the credit card machines and all that, and I had them on this little cart. And as we came to one of those walkways, he says, it was a Saturday, and he says, Krish, on Saturdays, they allow the allow you to push the trolley on the walkway. Well, the sign clearly said, no trolleys allowed. Well, I got on the walkway, and he noticed my brown skin and my knuckles turning white, and I'm petrified because I've learned to respect authority. But under obedience to my boss, I put that stupid cart on the trolley. Well, at the very next gap, he let me off. He says, it's okay, son. I can see you're torn between your allegiance for the rule of law and your respect for me. I'm sorry. He apologized to me. He said, I'm sorry. This is a great Zig Ziglar. He was making 75 grand a speech at that time. He's apologizing to little old me. I didn't think much of it. 2 days later, Miss Lori, my American mom, who's Mr. Ziegler's administrative assistant for all those years, Miss Lori came and said, hey, looks like you made the newspapers. At that time, he was writing a newspaper column on inspiration, which later on came out in a book called Something to Smile About and Something Else to Smile About. But he wrote a column on it called Hooray for Krish, Shame on Zig.
Wow.
So not only was his appreciation for my belief in private, his praise for my stand was public, because he never wanted me to forget the principle.
What an amazing leader. What's missing in leaders today? How do leaders get that type of followership and gain that kind of influence with their people?
Servant leadership. And I do evangelism and workshops all over the world. And I tell people, servant leadership is bending so low so you only see the feet of those you're called to serve, that when they look over your bent posture, they get a glimpse of that which may have sent you.
So how does someone know, like, how do you know if you're a servant leader, or what are some steps people can take to become a servant leader?
Servant leaders usually have consistency, which means every generation of people they have interacted with have the same conversation. So your generation is slightly different than my generation or whatever. How old are you, Eric?
I'm 40.
40. And so you are?
60.
60. So you and I are the same thing. Yeah. I have a joke that'll knock your hair out, but you won't heard it.
You must have told him that one already.
He already heard it.
A couple of times. About 40 years ago, by the way.
Poor Harry. I'm sorry, Harry.
Sorry, it's all good.
Yeah, well, don't say that joke. I like my hair, okay?
But the generational attribute of leadership, and that was his rarity. I have met people who are 90 years old, who were older than him, who appreciated him. I've met people who are much younger than him who appreciated him. He had the quality of homespunness to him. So when you met with Mr. Ziegler in a conference room or something, you never looked at a boss. You looked at the uncle who is not quite your dad, who can discipline you, but the guy you want to go, who's just like your dad, who's got a little extra.
That's
great. I know exactly what you mean.
Krish, how did you end up working for Zig? So you went to that conference. What was the story that you took the left turn when everyone went right? How did you guys end up connecting and then working for him?
I think that day he talked on how to stay motivated or whatever. And I wrote down 8 pages of notes and I went back to my office. And at that time I had to borrow the old IBM Selectric from the lady who says you can use it from 7:30 to 8, but the general manager cannot see you behind my desk when he arrives at 8. So from 7:30 to 8, I would pound out, and you know, it took me like 5 days to do those 4-8 pages. I still have the notes somewhere. As I was reliving the notes, I realized that there was something that was jumping out, because this conversation was very simple. And the one thing I realized in that day was that every bit of advice he gave was so cheap and so free that most people wouldn't take it because it was easy. They wanted, see, this is the difference. the advice that is given now, we want it to be complicated, we want it to be expensive, and we want it to be difficult. So when we fail, not if, we can blame the system, the process, or the corporation. By admitting to yourself something is easy, you forfeit the right to complain.
Wow. So thus the shine shoes, the pressed shirt, right? Yeah. Just so those things are too simple.
Treat your wife like a thoroughbred. Ladies, right. you want a champ, you know, stop treating him like a chump. You know, stuff like that. And I just like it. No, when you look at it from a language standpoint, I pride myself on my ability to make a twist a phrase. When I first began down this path, I remember I said, Mr. Ziegler, everybody is listening to me. They're giving me the credit of doing a nice presentation, but nobody is buying. And that's when he says, well, maybe you are being accepted and acknowledged, and you need to be applauded and appreciated. So I said, what does that mean? He says, to move from being accepted to applauded, you need to own the game. You cannot just walk into the game. You need to either reinvent the game or change the rules in such a way that you will win.
Well, that's so
okay,
powerful.
That's no. Now you can't stop there, Krish. Come on now. Because so, I'm you at this point.
Yeah,
you're
so
my Zig.
So I'm saying to myself, so how do I change? So, okay, you walk into a place and they say, oh, you're from India. Well, what gave it away, Sherlock, right? You know, you from India is an accepted statement. You're from India. Do you know my doctor? That's an acknowledgement statement, right? This is patronizing. It has nothing to do with the price of beans or the cost of what I'm offering. It is just saying that I don't want to be, you know, you're talking about theories that are coming out now, whether they're critical or whether they're race. But back then we had them just, they existed throughout humanity. People just didn't know how to dance around the eggshells. Now you have advocacy groups. See, now if I was in America now, I could go up to Denton County and stand up in front of an advocacy group and say I'm a first-generation immigrant who's not getting enough sales because people are not treating me well. And there'll be someone busting someone else's chops for it. But back then, all I had to do was go to my boss, and he said, why don't you record yourself? I said, huh? He said, buy yourself an old-fashioned recorder, ask the client to record yourself, and then when you get back in the car, ask yourself if the conversation you had and the dialogue you had was just an accepting dialogue, or was it one of those patronizing things saying, hey, you're an Indian immigrant. I need to give you a chance. I don't know how to talk to you, and I don't want to get in trouble. Well, that doesn't allow me to win. It just allows me to know that I already knew I was an Indian immigrant when I got here. I don't need this knucklehead in Denton County to tell me that. So I'm listening to myself, and there's certain words that I'm pronouncing with my British vernacular or my mixed vernacular, and the American slang is slightly different. So I said, Mr. Ziegler, I think I'm tripping up on my pronunciation and my enunciation. He said, own it. I said, how would I own it? Well, that afternoon I come back, and at my table, there's a dictionary. I go to his office and I said, sir, Miss Laurie put a dictionary on my thing. He says, yeah, every word has a buddy. And maybe there are better ways to say the word that's tripping you up that will prevent you from being tripped up. Now, what happens is the moment you learn 8 different ways for the same word, your horizons expand. You're now ahead of the guy who only knew one way to accept you. You knew 8 other ways to get to him, which means, and this is very vital for all of your listeners and the people who watch your podcast. This is very vital. This is going from push to pull.
How so?
This is, you know, otherwise, typically you're pushing against the grain. You're pushing, hoping that something will give. To be on the other side of saying, hey, I don't know if you're good enough to buy from me, but I'm going to take a shot.
Oh, that's funny.
It's almost like your attitude changes. Like, this guy doesn't deserve me. He only knows one way how to define a word.
My goodness.
And before I know it, I'm suddenly the guy teaching. And before I know it, they're sending me to seminars on writing because they said you've got 8 different ways. And now, believe it or not, I have a training center in Dallas that is called the Ziegler Summit, where I conduct communication classes. Pre-COVID, we did a lot more in person, and we'll start again. 100% of my audience here is white, and they're coming to me to say, hey, can you teach me how to... You know, it's just fascinating to think that in one lifetime of 30 years, you would go full circle from being the guy who people are saying, can you repeat that again? with someone saying, hey, can you repeat that? That was brilliant. I really want to write it down.
It is. I mean, I think Eric and I are just sitting here just stunned. Like everything that's coming out of your mouth is incredible. Number one, great stories. They totally hit home. What did you learn the storytelling from Zig, or is this kind of part of your heritage?
I had three mentors. Of course, all of them are now gone, but regardless of the publicity around them. But 1999, I wrote on a napkin when the new millennium was coming around and Y2K was on the horizon and people said the whole world would go dark. I was excited because if we didn't have power, it'll be just like we were in India, but I wanted a head start. So I said, I want to be excited in the dark. So on a napkin, I wrote down three names. I wrote Ziegler, Zacharias, Ravi Zacharias, and then I wrote Adrian Rogers. So Ziegler was, I wanted to be able to teach like Mr. Ziegler, train. I wanted to be able to reach like Ravi Zacharias with that intellectual veracity, the philosophical bearings. In fact, today in my class, I brought up some stuff on philosophy. And then I wanted to be able to preach like Adrian Rogers, because as an evangelist, I was called all over the world. I wanted to be able to do that. So with Adrian Rogers, I learned the alliteration. So all words I use begin with the same letter or something to keep it simple. Everything has a formula. With Mr. Ziegler, I learned the ability to go down a story. With Ravi, I'd learned the ability to interject philosophy while telling the story. So this is a harder approach because I use that triad model in everything I do. So people often ask me, hey, you do everything for hours on end without notes. How do you remember? And I jokingly tell people, I've now become like a 6-CD player on random. I don't know what's coming out, but it's probably good since I put it in. So
what was your kind of practice to put it in?
Memorizing, and I actually have a very simple formula for this. It'll help your audience as well. I said, when you internalize something, you have to personalize it, because whatever you want to learn, you first have to ask yourself. So every time I read in a trifold approach. First, I read by saying, what is the author saying in general? So you got B2B sales. If I'm reading it, I'll say, okay, what is the author saying in business to business sales? Then as I'm reading it, if something catches my mind and I'm trying to engage with it and internalize it, I immediately flip the question and say, what is the author saying to me? And then if I find it captivating enough to make my arsenal, I would underline or highlight that key point. And somewhere else, I would rewrite it, giving them credit by saying, how would I now say it to someone else?
Chris, what are you thinking, Eric?
So I'm going to go back to the last thing you said, and people can, like, when you're talking about you going to Zig and saying, you know, I mispronounce words. There's so, like, just that level of awareness and reflection and something deep inside to want to get better, I'm assuming, because most people wouldn't say that. I have a stepsister who's lived here. I mean, we've been here for 30 years. She sounds like she just got off the boat yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There isn't, not everybody has that. And where does that come from?
In fact, you bring that up because I get in trouble with some of the migrant groups because I'm also a first generation migrant, but I tell them accents throughout the history of humanity have always been geographic. They're not genetic. If three generations you have an accent, it's because you want to have one.
That's right.
The way you will overcome that is stop thinking in the local language if you want to be a global presence. English is 82% of the world's effective and profitable conversation takes place in English. Huh. Yeah, the argument, maybe we got more people who speak Chinese. Well, unless you want to deal in yen. I mean, it's like, you know, yeah, 100, you know, a lot more people speak Chinese, and who would have ever thought that in the year 2021, we'd all be doing Zooms because someone ate a bat. Yeah, if wishes were horses. that's a conversation for a different day. And the other thing I realized, guys, is that when I added humor that was behavioral and not just anecdotal. I do anecdotal humor, but a lot of what I do is behavioral humor. It makes the learning go down easy.
So when can you give us an example?
I'll give you an example. So when Mr. Ziegler came and said, can you change the way you pronounce words? I had to ask myself a question. Well, I'm still speaking English, but when I go to England and I go to India, do I go back to the way I was? So I said, yeah. So now the skill is not just changing the way you pronounce a word, but remembering why you pronounced it that way and geographically changing your lexicon in order to now be in the pull mode. So that's a harder thing. So I can say aluminium and I can say aluminum. I can say representative and I can say representative depending on where I am.
It's like a different language.
Yeah, it is. And so what happens is when I'm speaking to those people and I do the midnight conferences for them, some of them will say, hey, you lived in the West, but you haven't forgotten us. There's a principle there. Mm-hmm. If I want to impact people if you want to impact people in Azerbaijan, the principle still acquired that you have is behavioral, where you have to ask yourself, how did that culture shape itself? Who are their heroes? What is their currency? When did they have their revolution? So in my international ventures, when I first approached Ziegler, if I could run their international, remember, someone always has the job you want. People ask me why I dress the way I do. I always wanted to be a talk show host, or a game show host. So that's why I dress the way I do. But I studied.
Watch out, Steve Harvey.
I studied a book, which back then, I don't know if it's in print. It's called Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. It was one page on every country. So when I landed in Taiwan, I knew that even though I had the position of the person who was negotiating the deal, the guy who I was negotiating with was the president of their company, and the president of my company is the only one that should walk beside him. The president of my company would always say, Bubba, why am I walking next to this guy? I don't know what we're doing here. You negotiated the deal. I said, no, culture requires that I stand next to their director of international operations because that's my title. You stand next to the president. Don't worry about anything. This is optics. Now, I wouldn't have known that had I not read the book. Now, here's the irony. Forget the world. Most of our country doesn't even know who we got independence from.
Most of America doesn't know?
Yeah, you ask. Yeah. I mean, you do that the man true. On the street. Why? You know, I had a kid ask me one time, do you have July 4th in India? I said, no, we just go from the 3rd to the 5th. Of course you have July 4th every day, everywhere. Yeah. But
I should have known something like that was coming.
It means something here.
Yeah.
I'll give you a classic story. I was invited to speak in Concord, Massachusetts. Now, you don't have to be Concord, Massachusetts.
I think Harry was born there.
Shots of the Revolutionary War were fired. Yeah. This is where the militiamen came out of the church, and Pitcairn has that thing, you know, if a war begins, let it begin here. And, you know, the world changes. I'm invited to speak there as an immigrant who understands. I teach American history every year to young patriots in Austin. Okay, so this is fascinating. You talk about people on the pull. I teach American history in America. And I didn't learn it. I learned it in India because my dad said, one day when you get there, I don't want you to be a second-class citizen. I want you to know more. Yeah. So I'm invited to Concord, and this guy calls me up 3 days before the speech, and he says, oh, we went on YouTube, and we realized you have some religious opinions, you have political opinions. And I said, yeah. He said, is there any possibility of you still doing the engagement? We love your style and your energy, but can you do it without doing anything political or religious? Now, this is Concord. This is where America was formed. This Paul Revere's ride takes place along that river there.
Right. Because they're nonconformists at one time.
But again, I'm a strategic thinker in the sense that I always try to figure out how you can split and do it with immunity, how you can be forceful. This is Henry Kissinger diplomacy. Always stand on their toes without them knowing you're hurting them.
Nice.
Something right. I've forgotten now, because, you know, in order to stand on someone's toes as authority, you have to have the equipment. You can't leave it in Afghanistan.
That's
so
true.
So it's like,
oh my goodness.
So you know, it's like now America is truly where, you know, they always pronounced it Iran. It's Iran, but they did. Now they're right. Iran is what they should say.
Yeah.
Because Iran has all their equipment. But when I got to Concord, sidebar, I called the guy up and I said, listen, I'm just an immigrant from India. I don't want to offend anybody in your fair state. And I'm really privileged to have this opportunity. I play the schmuck. And I said, can I quote some of your founding fathers? Would that go okay? And they said, absolutely. They'd love you.
Oh,
so I stood up. I opened October 2nd. I opened the speech by saying, How many of you would like an immigrant from India to quote one of the founding fathers?
And they said,
love it. So I said, okay, Daniel Webster is my hero. He's a little lesser known, but I love him because of his oration. I love him because of his speeches. Daniel Webster said this: if we and our posterity reject religious instruction and authority, violate the principles of eternal ethics, trifle on more. I violated all of his rules. And the guy comes to me and he says, you did it with immunity. Bravo. He says, it takes a person of considerable ingenuity to find a way to stay the course. It's easy.
So
to
he bail. Realized it.
It's easy to bail. Adrian Rogers, that's why, you know, one of the people I appreciate a lot. He says, it's, if you want success in life, it's never too late to start. It's always too soon to quit.
So why? Okay. So some people that I've, that we've interviewed or talked to, they would say, well, I have my principles. And you know, if we can't talk about God and if we can't talk about politics, as we're talking about history, I'm probably not the guy for you. But you still went, talked the way you needed to talk, but made them feel good about it. That's wisdom.
Yeah, and that is, see, wisdom requires, you know, everybody thinks win-win. I think win-win-win. I have to win for myself. I have to win for those I engage with. And I have to win for those who don't know who I am. So that day in Concord, there were probably 20 people who knew who I was that was part of the core group and maybe had heard me at the Fleet Center in Boston with Rudy Giuliani and all that. And people say, why don't you drop their names? And I said, pretty sure Rudy Giuliani is not talking about the time he was on a program with Krish. So why should I break that up?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
I would be.
But that day in the audience, there were 400 people who didn't know me, who needs to know that I'm still proud. I'm still grateful for whence I came. I am immensely happy of where I am. I will always honor this country. And so, you know what? You take your licks with that. Now, I've been into, and the reason is also this, from a purely speculative heart, I tell people, if I had not gone to that seminar and taken the $400, which would have been my right, I would not have entered this whole world. So the whole concept of success for me is success is not who you are in relation to where you began and what you began with. That's a good definition. That's just success. Success is who you are in relation to where going to where success is, where you don't belong, and hoping by sheer centripetal force you're sucked in, which means I've always gone against the grain. I've always been in places where I was not invited by telling people, I'm not going to sit here and say, there you are. I'm going to walk in and say, here I am. Now, here's the principle. If you dislike what I did, which means I try something and it backfires and I fall flat on my face, the worst I do is break even. I didn't have it to begin with. I gave it a shot. I came up short. Big whoop.
Right. That's so encouraging. Have you looked back at something in your history and said, this is where I really fell flat?
Well, yeah. I remember one time I was speaking for a group, and in those days I would tell anecdotal humor, which means a joke I heard, which I thought was funny, and I thought it would be funnier if I told it, not realizing it probably had made the rounds. And I got up to speak, and I was getting ready to the punchline, and a little girl ran up to the front, delivered the punchline, and ran back out. So you're deader than a doornail there, and you have to look up, and then I did not have the recovery then. But in years since, whenever I fell flat and something bombed, I had this recovery line. I said, I don't know where that joke was born, but today it died right here. At least that buys you time to go on to your next point.
Yeah, I may plagiarize that one.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely use that. Krish, so for the young speakers out there like Harry and I, who want to get on world stages, what are some tips that you can give? What are good ways to be able to do that?
One thing is, one of the things I will encourage folks to do always is, and this one of the, I started by going into prison ministries and doing the unorthodox things, you know. So if you want to succeed in this world, you have to be blue ocean. Speaking has been around for a while. What is your unique selling proposition? So getting into an arena that is already inundated and popular, most people speak because they feel they have something to say. I think that if you prepare and say that you speak because you have something to give, which means it's coming out in the form of your message, but you're giving them a glimpse into something they would not have had they never heard you. That's the only way I'm remembered, because I don't compete with all the other people. Man, I don't know how to twist a pretzel, and I don't know how to make that into a fortune. I can't
what
get.
What do
a,
you know? Like, what do you
I,
say?
I,
you
can, get? I can't get a twin. So there are some things which are shtick, which you can parlay, and those guys have done really well.
Right.
So that lightning in a bottle is rare. So some people will be invited because of something they did. Some people will be invited because of some breakthrough idea that they have, but that's a fad. I've been successful now speaking. I think my first paid engagement was December of 1992. So next year will be 30 plus years since I've been paid for this. But one of the things I have told speakers who are aspiring is, as you're getting into the ranks, there will be more downtime than there will be uptime. There will be more time calibrating between time speaking. That's when you need to give it away more. And in the sense that unless you're constantly out there, so I did every Rotary Club I did, and people would always say, I really believe I have something to give, and that's fine. But I made sure. Now, I did it in areas where it would not conflict. So I went to areas where the traditional speaker would not go. So I made sure I was in the prison ministry, in the homeless shelters, where if I went to a Rotary Club, it was for a very specific purpose, as somebody's guest. So I only did one Rotary Club a year. If every Rotary Club figured out that you do for speaking for free, that's all they'll do. They'll keep inviting you for free. But I went to the Rotary Club one time because I wanted to impact the 25 business people there who would then bring me back into their company. So I have a formula. Every year I give away 10 speeches to audiences that have capacity, which means salvation. These are known, like big foundations and all that. So I actively seek them out. Another thing I did in the early days, and I still do once or twice a year, is I agree to be an MC if they invite me to a fundraiser.
Wow.
They've had me as a speaker before, and the next year they don't want me as a speaker, but they want me to back at their fundraiser because I was their speaker last year and I'm on their list. I said, hey, I'm going to be there anyway. And one of the things I haven't done in a while is an MC. And for them, man, I got a separate speaker. I got last year's speaker an MC.
Mm, yeah. Nice.
You always, the lights are always on. The camera is always rolling. And I understand the social media component, but I'm not on Facebook because, again, I come from a philosophical bent. So Facebook is the only place where everybody is hiding behind their real face and none of them have read a book.
That is hilarious.
So I stick with LinkedIn, where I try to engage and I draw, so that's, and I have other people who do other things, but those two things, my volunteering ability and my ability. And the other thing is, have a 6-hour window to respond yay or nay. If somebody asks me to come somewhere and I can't, I make sure I recommend someone else. I don't just say I'm not available.
Well, put me on that list.
Sure.
Chris, can you?
Like I said, you guys asked once, and I said yes. I mean, I told you when I was
available, awesome.
And the earlier slot was this, so we made it work. And I'm actually videotaping there. When they asked me today, I said, "Hey, I've got a show from 12 to 1, so can you come at 8?" So my normal start time here would be 9, but then I had them come an hour later, so we can still get today's stuff accomplished.
Thank you.
So that's
we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and work is just for me, I've always said work is a privilege. One of these days they'll put us down and give us a 6x4 plot. If you're good enough, it'll be a convertible coffin. Other people can see you as you go. But one of these days we get to stop doing it.
What about your charity that you're involved in? Do you want to spend a minute or two on telling us the group?
I have a foundation called Mala. SkyPass Foundation is the foundation I work with here. I'm on their board. But I think they use my Zoom credentials. That's where their name came up.
Okay.
But it's a group of companies we have here, and I have a partnership in one of them called Sky Life Success. My ministry is called Mala, M-A-L-A, Mala Ministries. This is what I do. Through them is where I just recently put up a scholarship in Mr. Ziegler's name at a seminary in India. I build churches in India and all of that. I do leadership conferences with pastors in sub-Saharan Africa. All of that comes through the foundation. And then I have another training company, which is just my name, Krish Dunham. So it's a foundation in the sense that it's very unique. It's funded by companies whose bottom line I impact. So I've never done a fundraiser, and it's now going on its 13th year.
Wow. Krish, why? So, you've had so much success, 30 years as a speaker, author, internationally known. And today, before we started, you're telling me that you're recording a brand new sales training that's going to have 40 plus modules. Why aren't you retired yet? What's driving you?
Well, I think, people have a misnomer, because one of the things is I only work 6 months of the year, so I'm not wealthy. But I am sufficiently stable, which is, for most of my life, I only worked half of the year because I gave away the other half. I did not want to wait to give when I was rich and tired. I wanted to be able to be available when I was young and energetic. So 75 countries, 6 continents, but it takes a lot of time to go away from here. Now, you know the sales funnel as well as I do. When you leave for a period of time, it takes a while to ramp back up. So during COVID, one of the things that happened was my international work came to a halt. And that took 20 years to get into the funnel. So now for me to reach out to them in a larger way, we said this academy would be the right way to do it. Yeah, the money is there. I have, I have a home in India. In fact, on the 25th of September, I'm planning to fly to Albania, believe it or not. I was there last year, and I'm actually looking at buying a small 2-bedroom apartment on the Adriatic Ocean, somewhere outside of Tirana by the coast, so that I would have access to all of Eastern Europe to give away all of Mr. Ziegler's principles and philosophies. So
that's so awesome. I've actually been to Albania.
Beautiful country.
And it's very beautiful.
And it's still awesome. Conservative and old fashioned compared to the rest of Europe. So that's people don't realize, people say, why would you want to go live in a communist country? I said, well, I already live in one.
Take your pick.
I'll just go there and be closer to another Georgia, and maybe we can watch the election count there.
Nice.
Wow. So what's the name of your sales training that's coming out? We'd
this
love
one
to help
is,
you promote it.
This one is just called, we're going to call it the Krish Dunham Success Academy, and sales is just sales 101, 102, and 103 will be the modules. But my website will be krishdunham.com, just my name. So
awesome. Krish, thank you so much. Thank you for spending the time with us today. You're awesome. And love the energy, love the attitude, and hope one day we can be as good of leaders and followers as you were to Mr. Ziegler.
I'm going to shine my shoes right now.
Yeah, goes the credit. Hopefully he's smiling down. And as I tell people, as you slide down the banister of life, I hope all your splinters point in the right direction.
Thanks. From here to there, you're gonna grow because you've listened to our show. If you like our podcast vibe, don't be a stranger. Hit subscribe. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to join the B2B Sales Secrets Facebook group, and we'll see you on the next episode.